The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Oh, many of you know from sitting in the pews on Easter with me that I always feel caught on this Sunday by the fact that in the Unitarian Universalist tradition, we don't generally walk through the other pieces of the story of Holy Week. And without Good Friday in particular, that day which really wasn't good at all, Easter Sunday makes no sense. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, borrowing a phrase from Reverend Adam Clayton Powell Sr., whose pews Bonhoeffer used to sit in that Harlem church when Bonhoeffer wasn't teaching Sunday school there, Clayton Powell used to talk about cheap grace. It's a phrase he meant to capture a church that granted its people forgiving love, the love of God that forgave everything without requirements to confess what they had done wrong and work to repair the harm and commit to the life that it called them to. It's a second chance granted again and again with no invitation to feel the weight of the harm we've done. And so in some ways, the magnitude of the gift of forgiveness or second chances is lost to us, but also what it calls out of us, Bonhoeffer thought, the call to discipleship, he called it. Not merely spectatorship, but a moral engagement with participating in the redemption of the world. Good, I think, can be the same way. Most things can be. You forget what a gift it is to have in the world the possibility of goodness all around you if you don't remember some sense of how awful and despairing it feels in your bones to have its absence. It's why I think those who have fought in wars are often our most committed pacifists, or people at least working for peacemaking and committed to it. And those who forget send us off to sacrifice another generation of children. Good Friday, in the story told during Holy Week in the Christian tradition, let me remind us, is this. It's of this godly man, Jesus, this man who we are told spoke liberating truths, challenged those in power to be compassionate, invited people to love their neighbor and even their enemies, everyone to be humble and introspective about their own failings, never to throw the first stone or any stone, got angry when the temple places of our lives, anything sacred was diminished or cheapened or turned into a place for profit, and tried to remind folks where real power comes from, the kind we should throw our lives into pursuing, that power that comes from a life that is grounded in the highest virtues of service and courageous witness on behalf of the most vulnerable, drawing a circle of love wider and wider in all the ways it invites us to stretch our spirits to do so. And so much else he talked about. And for his life and this set of crimes he committed, he is convicted, sent to a torturous ending by those in power so that the status quo could be maintained, so no hard work of moral and social change need happen. And on Good Friday, that day that speaks of no good at all, this man and others were nailed to crosses in the Middle Eastern sun after having been beaten and humiliated, and Jesus dies while forgiving those who hurt him with his last breaths. It's not a story for bunnies and bonnets. But Easter makes no sense without it, right at our shoulder. Some years, it is particularly hard and strange to recount the story that precedes today's. Some years, evil has felt for me a little further away, a little subtler, a little more hidden than it has this year. There have been lots of Good Fridays through time, and this year I feel like has had more than its share. Days when the sky was rent, as it says in this story of Holy Week on Good Friday, they feel like familiar days. There have been plenty of them this year when we could imagine it would feel fitting for the skies to be torn and grow dark because of the news we read and hear again and again. And so we can understand, maybe this year especially, that on Friday and the Saturday to follow in the story, when the sun went into hiding, that the followers of Jesus believed evil had won, that it can feel that way, that people who believed that through his leadership, hope and truth and goodness would triumph were devastated. Another day when there is no ceasefire. Another day when despots continue their egotistical wars and journalists are arrested for telling the truth and business makes products that disrupt the social fabric and the social emotional growth and well-being of our young people for coin. And nations invest more in armies than in disarming the mutually assured destruction of a planet boiling in its own juices, and spend more on reality TV than on homes for their unhoused neighbors. On these days, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to feel what these people in the story felt. And so this morning, this Easter morning in the story, we come with them to the tomb, to this place that holds the remains of someone and something they loved, to a dream, actually, not just a person in that tomb, but a dream. And in the story, we're supposed to be standing with them on this morning, waiting to pay our respects for a funeral to who and what we loved and believed in and hoped for and now seems impossible. We have lots of tomb places in our lives, some of which were named in the reading and the prayer. And as the prayer reminded us, all sorts of things happened. We can sit at tombs to gather ourselves for what's unimaginable and life beyond them. We can mark experiences that completely reorient our whole being so much we're not sure what the next step forward is. We can hide in them because the world seems hard, and it can be, and it is at times. And the truth is that we human beings, we find a way to live through the most devastating life experiences, a lot of us. We are a resilient lot, in general. None of us would be here if generation after generation of people hadn't kept going. I know just a couple of the stories from my own ancestors. Perhaps you know some of the ones from your lineage. We go on, we human beings, from the tomb places in our lives, maybe hollow sometimes, but we do, we endure. And that power to want to endure is so strong in us. And Easter is about that in part, but not just about that. Because the story we tell today says, and we tell it annually to immerse ourselves in it, that the tomb, it wasn't about something awful happening and simply moving on, that it was much more extraordinary a message than that, bigger than just that. In the story this morning, that huge boulder, the one that seemed to seal the story's end at death and loss and evil victorious, this Sunday morning, these disciples arrive and it's been rolled away from the tomb. Not raided by grave diggers, not one more bad ending to the story, but the opposite, the unthinkable, the unimaginable, the story says, and take it for literal truth or metaphor or both. They step in and the miraculous has happened. This metaphysical force they come to see that is at the heart of the universe that is speaking to them of a different, incontrovertible truth that they need to own, that rescues them in this worst moment of their lives. And some of them that day, they meet the man Jesus risen, though they don't recognize him. They see him and they exchange words, but mostly what we're told is that after this day, they lean into the knowledge that he was with them in some form, that the goodness and the beauty and the truth of him lived on in some form with them. And they had work to do. They had incredibly hard work to figure out how to live in his absence, how to lead without him. But that day told them what would persist and claim the day. Always, it said. And it wasn't evil, but it was hope and it was possibility and it was the good against all the odds, it seemed. And it isn't just Christianity that preaches this message. Most religions have some story or stories of the same thing. They have their own that they tell and retell, like Ram and Hanuman killing Ravana and saving Sita, good, victorious over evil, powerful evil, and Moses and the Israelites being aided in their escape and defeat of Pharaoh's armies. Stories again and again in the human larger family of the same message. We humans, we cling to these stories to remind us how resurrectable and miraculous and enduringly good hope will be in this world. And we tell these stories again and again, and we make them part of our sacred scriptures. Because we will need those reminders. And because anchoring our lives in these stories, I think, changes how we live. We see if we live into these stories, we see that in the hardest times, we must believe in, but also choose, resurrection. We must live it as the men and the women, the people in the Easter story did, the ones who seemingly lost everything precious to them, most precious to them. And choosing resurrection is no cheap grace. It means, among other things, living love as a verb, not a noun. Justice, not as some abstract notion, but fleshy and concrete. Hope, not as an idea, but a set of strategies with muscle and stubborn persistence and generous funding. Good to remember in the election season. And when we do this, when we choose and anchor in resurrection and its obligations, we become the people who lift cars off of trapped bodies because we cannot stand to see life hurt or lost and surprise ourselves with our own strength. Or like an aunt of mine, by marriage, a doctor, married to a doctor who lost her only child to cancer, and at a time when pain management was not a specialty anyone in her city knew well. And from her inestimable grief and loss, chose to save others the same pain or some of it, and opened the first palliative care center in Mumbai and named it for her daughter. People save beautiful wild places from businesses that would mine or drill there out of this commitment to live resurrection. We participate in practices of restorative justice out of it. We pay a land tax to local native communities for the rematriation of land, and we argue for the honoring of at least one past treaty to begin with out of it. We call a friend who we have left a rift lie too long with and try and fix it. We take care of something we promised to do and redeem a failure. We plant a garden. We clean off some graffiti. We bring a meal. We give up social hour so our neighbors can dine with beauty and grace and warmth and welcome. Last week, maybe a week and a half ago, there was a luncheon for, I think, 20 people to celebrate one of our members' final radiation treatments. Each of the folks at the lunch, and those two who couldn't be there, had driven this member to or from his radiation treatment so he didn't have to go to them alone. In ways huge and intimate, public and quiet, we choose resurrection. We make ourselves Easter people, and this an Easter world. We don't just dream of it. Because Easter isn't a truth for one moment in history at one tomb in one story 2,000 years ago. It's meant to echo. That's why we retell it until every winter place of the human heart blooms and every tomb is a reminder not just of what was lost, but what is beyond loss forever. With all the versions of the story we tell across peoples and around the world, we are the ones who anchor here, we are the ones who are called to life with sleeves rolled up and hearts wagered. That is Easter. The poet Adrian Rich once wrote, "My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who, age after age, perversely, with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world." In a world that looks bent on being a Good Friday horror show, may we be charged to look around for signs of the other truth, for places where the rock has been rolled away, that is to say, for places where love is incarnate and moving like a verb between people who do not hoard anything that is better shared, which is pretty much everything. Where hope is muscular and unapologetic and has strategies and asks for discipleship, may we magnify those stories, so others see the Easter truth in the world and risk for it also. And sing Easter songs with ebullient descants of alleluias. Thank you, choir. And join the movement of people in all the places we find ourselves through all times who have, despite what the world dealt them, lived resurrection.
Good morning. 5 years ago, my husband Chris Law and I stood up here during pledge season to tell our story of finding a spiritual home that welcomed his atheism and my Christian upbringing. UUSF is a place where questioning is encouraged, where we can each seek truth and meaning for ourselves, and where our children can explore these questions too. These remain some of the central reasons why we give to support this community. And what I could not know in 2019, could not even imagine, was how central this community would be to me through a global pandemic, how creative the staff and volunteers were to extend, strengthen, and deepen our connections. As chair of the Family Ministry Committee from 2021 to 2023, we played with how to engage the community. We hosted the first, and I hope only, virtual waffle breakfast in 2020. And as I participated in the weekly COVID advisory board meetings, I saw the way that the UU principles were held within the space as decisions were made. And I was so grateful when the church was reopened to families and children in fall 2021, knowing the devastating effects of isolation young people and parents were experiencing. In my son's rites of passage class, his big question was, "What is love?" And Reverend Mary Gans's answer was poetic and beautiful. But more importantly, my children and my family have seen love manifested in the actions of this community. We have loved each other in moments of joy and in moments of incredible pain and uncertainty. I give, and our family gives, to support a place that can do that, that can create a loving space in a hurting world. I hope that you will join me in giving to support this community. Pledges received today by midnight will be entered into the drawing for a Tahoe getaway. Jack and Sherry, who are leading this pledge drive, will be at the table after service, or you can give conveniently online by clicking the pledge button. Thank you, and I appreciate the ways in which this community continues to show up for each other.
Happy Easter, everyone. My name is William Klingelhofer. I'm a 30-year member of this congregation. I was raised Roman Catholic. In 1972, I married Jill Brindell. Jill's family, on her father's side, is Jewish. Her father, Bernard Brindell, was music director for over 20 years for a large congregation on Chicago's north side, Temple Sholem. When Jill's mother, June, showed me a printed sermon by Wilmette, Illinois Unitarian Reverend Ed Pera, I decided to attend a service here. I admired the thoughtful people and deep roots that our congregation has with the San Francisco community, so I joined. I was also very happy to discover that when the 1906 earthquake and fire destroyed Jewish Temple Emmanuel, that our congregation invited them to use our sanctuary for services for several months until they could rebuild. Please open your gray hymnals to number 318, We Would Be One. Please just read along. I just want to play a little of it. This music and these words together express my feelings about being a Unitarian Universalist. The words are by California Unitarian Universalist Reverend Samuel Anthony Wright. The music by the great Jan Sibelius. The melody is simple in E flat major. we would be one as now we join in singing. The wonderful bass part accompanies the melody, moves in contrary motion, and makes a solid foundation for the harmony. This part, the transition, is the pivot point of the piece. What in us is true? It's the transition of a master composer. It's set beautifully by the man who wrote the words, Samuel Anthony Wright, and it's out of the key. You go back to E flat, but anyway, so what in us is true points us on our way. Love and justice strive to make us free and show to us a new community. I invite everyone, the next time we sing it, to sing in full voice. Sibelius can make a big sound in Sibelius, and pledge with all your hearts to support this congregation.